Welcome to the Pride of Detroit podcast, the PODcast. It's what we call it that, prideofdetroit.com, Pride of Detroit on Facebook, at Pride of Detroit on Twitter for everything you need to know about the Detroit Lions, the football team of the NFL for Detroit that have lions on their head. I'm Chris Lemieux. Having a wonderful night already. I'm Chris Lemieux at Detroit Southern. Jeremy Reisman is here at Detroit on Lion. Fearless leader Jeremy Reisman. Hello.
Hi. You seem to be having too good of a good time after this Lions loss. You were having so much fun on that Facebook Live.
I was drinking on that Facebook Live. Yeah. Like Ryan Matthews, who is here. Back is the motherfucking rock guy. At Ryan_POD. He will drink like Gatorade. I will go on there with a Moscow Mule. I don't care.
I'll drink Gatorade to stay hydrated. But Jeremy, you have to remember why Chris is so peppy.
Oh, that's right.
He's not a fan.
Here it comes. Come at me, man. No, I felt that. I felt that. And I'm going to tell you how much I felt that here very soon. But we need to also introduce Alex Reno here at Alex_Reno, who is playing
not,
with
not a visual medium. Not a visual medium.
Don't
quit
wave.
Waving, Alex.
How's it going, guys?
Not a visual medium, which is why I'm wondering what he's doing with one of his hands now, too.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Let's just start this podcast.
Yeah, you're going to have to get a little closer to the microphone, though. Once again, we're doing this all over again with the volume. But let's start this podcast. Lions have fallen 16-15 to the Tennessee Titans. The Titans. Why? You fell to the Titans? The Titans. The Titans. The Titans? The Titans.
Reno saw this one coming all from the get-go.
I'm the only one who predicted it, guys.
Yeah,
I mean,
Alex,
not that
Reno
I wanted
only
it to happen, but I was right.
Not that you wanted it to happen, but, you know, Mr.
I just saw it coming, like Miss Cleo.
Did you try to tell all of us? Did you try to tell y'all?
No, because I mean, I just picked it because it's, you know, it's the NFL, it's random. I didn't really have that strong of a feeling that it really was going to happen.
Well, I will say this, at least somehow the Browns managed to make us like not the worst fall down story of Sunday, because the Browns lost it in even more backbreaking fashion. But yeah, that was ugly. That was incredibly ugly.
Well, I mean, The fashion in which the Lions lost, that was bad. But the fact that the Lions lost to the Titans at home, I'm not taking that too hard.
No, and you shouldn't, because it's still just a game too. And like, as you say, this is the NFL. This game has been jury-rigged to be as close as possible in odds all across there. But still, just watching that game come down near the end, I don't know, I felt frustrated. I felt really frustrated watching that game.
Yeah, yeah, it was entirely frustrating, but I think people are kind of not seeing the forest through the trees. They're looking at this in a bubble and they're not acknowledging any context. People are so upset, up in arms, that we lost to the Titans at home. It's like, look at the entire picture. Look at all the things that happened. Look at all the players that got injured. Look at the linebackers that got hurt. Look at, you know, your arguably your best defensive player that went out after two snaps. I'm with Jeremy. I'm with you guys. I'm not completely bummed out about losing to the Titans in the home opener, but the fashion in which we lost, it hurt.
That was today. The fashion was more frustrating to me than losing to the Titans. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Especially when you're going up against like Delanie Walker, who's just like, we knew going in, intermediate passing, not exactly Lions' strongest spot at defense. And what do the Titans have, if nothing else? Marcus Mariota throwing to Delanie Walker.
And yeah, and you have to consider, too, that, like, how many teams are 2-0 right now in the NFC? One, right?
The Vikings and the Giants.
Okay,
yeah.
Two teams. So the fact that we're 1-1 and that we lost to the Titans, isn't really bad at all. It's the fact that we had so many injuries, and specifically to one position, and that's the position that's hurt us the most.
We're going to get to the injuries, yeah, real soon, but like in our next segment, we're going to really go in deep in the injuries. But yeah, let's just talk about the linebackers right now as a macro thing, because it's getting really bad.
Yeah, I don't know what the solution is there. I know a lot of people are talking about moving Killebrew maybe to linebacker, and we're frustrated that the Lions didn't do that mid-game, which that's insane. Like, why would you do that in the middle of a game with a rookie?
That's asking for trouble.
You wouldn't have saw much improvement at all. I mean, he doesn't look that good as a safety right now, and he's not going to be any better as a linebacker.
Right. So, in terms of Sunday's game, the Lions were just in a terrible position where everyone in the building knew where they were the weakest, and it just kind of happened to line up with one of the Titans' strengths, and no one could do anything about it. So, that last drive of the game with the Titans, I mean, we all just kind of saw it coming as they were chipping and chipping and chipping away, and no one could do anything about it. We were just heading towards this loss, and you were just hoping that there would be enough time for the Lions and Stafford to trot out another game-winning drive. But I think an undersold part of that game was how bad the offensive line played in that second half, because Stafford was under the gun pretty much that entire second half, and that's kind of what caused – I mean, he took a sack on that final drive. He was pressured on the final throw that caused the interception. The offensive line wasn't really good yesterday – whenever you're listening to this, Sunday, wasn't very good. And even though the Lions running game is kind of there, which I still am hesitant to believe in, there's some issues on that offensive line, and it's gonna hurt this team.
Not even just on the sacks, but I saw a lot of plays where you just watch Stafford have to scramble out of that pocket. Yeah. He's running a lot more than he needs to. And obviously that did give us one of the highlights of the day, which was Matthew Stafford truck sticking Parrish Cox. But Parrish Cox unfortunately got us back. He got us back because he was the one to finally redeem his name by picking off that ball.
Fucking Parrish Cox.
Yeah. Like,
and that play doesn't even go on the stat sheet where he got trucked, because there was a penalty on his team anyways.
That's right, yeah. I forgot completely about that.
So he can just pretend it never happened, even though the gif will live on forever and ever and ever.
I don't know. I want to ask Ryan about this, because I saw, what was it, SB Nation's Oh Holy Butt posted up there, and is basically like, he said Parrish Cox has to retire after that. Is getting just completely beat like that by a quarterback, is that the NFL's version of posterization? I ask you because you're like the big NBA fan here.
I don't know. People live on after that. For as much crap as Brandon Knight got for getting dunked on by DeAndre Jordan, and that's a center dunking on a guard, Brandon Knight is still one of the most like valuable players in the NBA when you think about contracts.
Which I never saw coming.
Parrish Cox, at the end of the day, he got his revenge.
It was Stafford, though. I mean, it's one thing if it's Big Ben or if it's somebody like Cardale Jones.
Stafford's kind of built like a tank.
I mean, I love Stafford. He knows when to lower the shoulder, and I've just never seen something like that out of him. Like, holy crap.
Of course we do. We all love Stafford. We're a bunch of Stafford slappies, but...
not me.
Most of us.
I'm
going to Chris.
Well, Chris isn't a fan, so he's not a fan of anything, including Notre Dame football after this weekend.
Nope. Yeah, love is over. Love is over.
We're seeing a different Stafford. What is the Stafford who is getting downfield on blocks? He's running he's running cornerbacks over. Like, I mean, are you guys okay with this? Because yeah, I'm kind of not.
He threw a block for Theo Riddick at one point, didn't he? Yeah.
Well, he got downfield on Amir Abdullah's juke. Too. He was down there, and he was like involved like in the tackle scrum. Like, I was like, get out of there. What are you doing? Like, I was like, you are one injury away from this entire fan base just going full blown Jake Rudock.
And that looks like it was going to happen at one point too. Like, he came up limping what should have been roughing the passer. And to the point you're making though, Ryan, then he spends the next 10 minutes like yelling at the refs for missing that roughing the passer call.
He should have.
He's really getting into it this year.
And I hate using words like passion and grit, because they're kind of overused terms with quarterbacks. But I know Stafford kind of has the reputation of, you know, putting the team on his back, but I've never seen him be this, like, vocally passionate, again, it's kind of hard for me to avoid some of these buzzwords, but...
Well, go on, and I'll...
I was just going to say, he seems to have hit a different level in terms of his emotions during the game, and I think that's a good thing.
Well, let me say this, and I've got a few thoughts on this. One is that, you know, when we did the interview with Golden Tate, he said basically that's who Stafford's been all along. So
right.
I'll take him at his word for that. The second part I would say to that is there's probably two readings of Stafford being that fired up. The first is the slap, what was going to be criticized as the slappy reading, that it's like, yeah, exactly what you're saying. Like, this is Stafford putting the team on his back. This is him, you know, wanting to win. And the same old Lions reading, the SOL reading, is, well, Stafford realizes that he's got to bail everyone else out because they're all incompetent. And, right. like, this is him realizing the futile struggle of being a Lions quarterback.
And I want to say something, too, about his actual play that I've noticed a big difference in. And that's, we've talked about a little bit, it's him on the run. Now, he's had, you know, big runs here or there. And I'm actually not talking about his rushes. But that touchdown pass to Anquan Boldin, that was Aaron Rodgers-esque. He created some time with his feet. He kind of did that like backyard football thing where he's like, I'm going to tell you to run that way. You run that way. I'm just going to throw it to an open spot and you get there. And Stafford doesn't really do that often. And that's something that's incredible. That's something that is a huge X factor for quarterbacks, mm-hmm. because a lot of times you're going to have, you know, a play isn't going to play out the way that you wrote it down.
And when he threw that ball to Boldin, Boldin was still completely covered too.
Absolutely.
Boldin just was like, nope, zip right out of the coverage.
That to me, like, that's the thing I'm most excited about with Stafford right now.
So that's Stafford. Ryan, Alex, if one of you guys want to speak to this, what though do we make about the receiving that game? Because there was a lot of dropped passes. And I know we've got some questions in the mailbag, but a lot of people are asking questions today about Golden Tate and Anquan Boldin, especially those two with the drops they had on Sunday.
They played bad. I mean, there's no other way you can paint it. There's no other way you can describe it. Golden Tate had a bad game. Anquan Boldin had a bad game.
Jones dropped a couple too, I believe.
He did. Something I noticed about Marvin Jones is that he tries to catch an awful lot of balls with his body. And it seemed like on the drops, that's exactly what he tried to do. He tried to haul it in using his hands and his body. And I don't know if it's still getting acclimated with Stafford and just how hard he throws the ball, or he's worried about his, you know, future as a hand model. But he needs to catch those balls. He needs to catch those balls with his hands and pause. But, I mean... it's just you're hoping that it gets cleaned up in, you know, in time for Green Bay. But I don't know. I'm not trying to be the Stafford slappy, but 22 of 40. I mean, he had what? Receivers had 8 drops. Receivers and running backs had 8 drops.
Yeah.
Something like that. Yeah.
I think that's more an aberration to one game because we certainly didn't see that many drops before. With these receivers.
And the thing about Golden Tate, too, is I'm wondering if it's like a rhythm thing, because it seemed as the number two receiver when he was next to Calvin, he just got so many targets and he got them in places where it seems like he's getting targets in different areas. It's not like consistently, but like it seemed as though he was getting more opportunities near the line of scrimmage to make defenders miss. And once he caught like one or two balls, I mean, if you want to go back to like a basketball comparison, once you see that, you know, ball go in the rim a couple times, you can develop a rhythm. I mean, if Golden Tate gets a couple grabs, he makes a couple guys miss, then, you know, it just becomes like, you know, it just becomes body, you know, muscle memory. And I don't know if it's a rhythm thing with Tate if he's just being used a little bit differently.
Overall, though, how can any football team? I'm a big believer in rhythm too. I believe it for the entire football team, and that's always why, like, I like the idea of up tempo too, because it takes advantage of rhythm.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. For a team to really get in rhythm. But how can you have rhythm when there were that many penalties in that game?
That's what I, yeah, and that's a great point. I mean, with all the penalties, how is it you know, easy to establish a rhythm when that's going on? So,
and especially,
and maybe you saw that with the frustration on that, the block by Tate, which was clearly a penalty.
17 penalties for the Lions, 29 total. The one that stood out to me and to everyone, you know, first and goal, Ebron should have had the touchdown. Really awful OPI call, and Ebron's still salty about that, and I would be, if I was in his shoes, I'd be salty about that too, because it was a really, like, it was the right call, but it was a really subjective call. It was on the quarter call.
I don't even think it was the right call, to be honest. Yeah, but he had his hand placed on his back. I don't think he ever pushed.
Right. And then two holding calls immediately after that, including another touchdown wipeout, three touchdowns wiped out on the day by penalties. Like, yeah, like, how can you establish a rhythm when you've got that many? Like, we were all watching it. We were all cheering when there were plays without flags.
Yeah,
few and far in between.
Right. It's tricky, though, because this offense is kind of built where they can weather that sort of storm, and they should have. But I mean, when you get three back-to-back penalties in the red zone, like, that's on you. I mean, I don't want to get too much into the penalty thing, because we can argue that there was too many flags thrown. But point to me more than that Ebron pass interference of what penalties should not have been called, because I didn't honestly see that much ticky-tacky stuff. And, you know, the Lions were called for three offsides. Those are pretty much indisputable. There's a delay of game. You can't dispute that.
Well, I'm not disputing the veracity of the calls. I'm more saying that, like, you can't get into rhythm when you are making those mistakes, though. Like, when you're making those mistakes and getting those flags thrown on you, it just takes you out of sorts, and you're constantly having to back up and reevaluate where you are, and it gets in your head.
I guess. I don't know. I'm not much of a rhythm guy myself, but I don't think this offense is really built to necessarily combat a long distance to go. They're kind of, you know, we talked a bunch about it last week. The Lions are a short yardage passing team, and so you get yourself into second and 17s. Like, maybe you can get yourself into a third and 10 after that, but then you're in a third and 10, and within a shaky offensive line, you're kind of screwed there.
I don't think you're going to find too many offenses in the NFL that are built for second and 17 or third and long.
Sure.
I mean, that's just the nature of the beast. I think if you're getting penalties, you're just shooting yourself in the foot. And I mean, any offense isn't going to be able to, you know, weather that storm. I don't care what kind of personnel you have out on the field.
Alex, any final thoughts about rhythm? Are you a rhythm guy, or are you not a rhythm guy?
I don't know. I guess I'm a rhythm guy, but I don't latch too much onto that.
I just wanted to ask the question, are you rhythm or not? Let's take a quick break.
I got the rhythm.
You got the rhythm? That's good.
Yeah.
All right, let's take a quick break here. When we come back, we're going to talk about injuries. There's a lot of blood being piled up on the sidelines now. And we're going to start talking about the Packers. The Lions are already on to Lambeau. This is a really bad, bad omen. But we're going to talk about what chance they may or may not have up in the green, green fields of awful Wisconsin.
Lamborghini Field, baby.
All right, continuing on here, before we get into talking about Green Bay, which is coming up already on Sunday, let's talk about the injuries. And there were a lot last Sunday. First one was Ezekiel Ansah to leave the field, which I think that's still probably the biggest one to really hit you. And then soon after that, Abdullah leaves the field. He's seen wearing a boot. Let's see, Ebron, he went through concussion protocol, but he came back. What else happened? You lost Antoine Williams. No one knows what the hell is going on with DeAndre Levy. He didn't even play. Kyle Van Noy left the field. Who else am I missing here?
Riley Reiff missed back. Five plays, but not too worried there.
And then Stafford for a little bit was limping, but he seems okay for now. But obviously the two big ones are Ezekiel Ansah and Amir Abdullah. I'm not going to talk much about Levy because he didn't play. Of Abdullah or Ansa, which do you think is the bigger one right now that the Lions are going to miss more immediately, Jeremy?
Ansa, no question. I think the Lions defensive line, I mean, the Lions defense, period, needs all the help it can get. The defensive line did okay against the Titans. They got some pressure, but I don't really think the Titans are that good of a team. And granted that the Packers also have offensive line problems of their own, but this would be a beautiful matchup to have Ezekiel Ansah. And there's an Ian Rappaport report out tonight, Monday night, that he has a high ankle sprain and is going to miss an indeterminate amount of time. So it doesn't look like they're going to have Ansah this week, unfortunately. So that, to me, is going to hurt the Lions more than Abdullah right now.
What do you think, Alex?
Yeah, I think high ankle sprains are usually out for at least 4 or so weeks, too. So that's, if that's true, that's pretty terrible news for the Lions. But I think, no question, it's on. So I don't even think you could argue for Abdullah.
Well, I mean,
I can't.
Okay. There's actually... I can't.
Go ahead, Brian. I want to hear this.
I think it's Abdullah. I think that this offense has, at times, it's looked like a good running team. And, I mean, you can't really argue with, you know, being third in the league in yards per carry when it comes to, you know, generating offense on the ground. And I don't know how sustainable it is to see Theo Riddick doing this, because we've never seen Theo Riddick run the ball longer than 3 yards a carry.
This is literally like his first year. We've seen him run more than like 3 yards. Yeah,
I was shocked. I was shocked. Every time he got the ball on Sunday, I was just flabbergasted. I had no idea who 25 was. I thought that they had somebody else in his jersey, but it's. I don't think it's sustainable. I think that the defensive line played well enough. They got a safety without Ansah on the field. They were able to generate some pressure without Ansah. I don't think Ansah was even healthy in the first game because he didn't make much of a stir either. So I think that they can weather the storm without Ansah, just because that is the position where they have the most depth. After Riddick, what running back are you going to trust? I mean, you going to trust Dwayne Washington? Are you going to trust Zach Zenner?
That's only two you got. Zenner was a healthy scratch.
Been a healthy scratch. I think Abdullah is a huge loss. I mean, if he has this like stress fracture in his foot, it could be bad.
Yeah, but what I would argue that the running backs might be the deepest right now, the way they're playing. I mean, maybe Theo Riddick, his runs may not be sustainable, but I thought that after the first game, and he went out in the second game and looked incredible. Dwayne Washington looked great. Amir Abdullah, only 18 rushes in 2 games. He's had less than half of the carries total for the team.
But he's had a lot of receptions, too.
I think the whole unit is looking great. And what has the defensive line even really done outside of the first 2 quarters? I mean, once it came to, like, the last few drives of the Colts, last few drives of the Titans, they were completely non-existent.
The one thing that hangs me up about the defensive line is, like, I think we're good on tackles, but, I mean, Devin Taylor's kind of stepped up a little bit at his position at defensive end. Like, he stepped up pretty well, and Kerry Hyder's been a remarkable discovery at tackle, but who fills in for that other defensive end if you're suddenly making Taylor your number one?
Well, Hyder's played the other edge spot.
Oh, does he play edge too? Okay.
Yeah. I mean, he kicks in sometimes, and I've noticed that they've been doing some stunting with him too, where, you know, he starts at D end and he'll move in just because he can generate such good push. But obviously they're both two huge blows, but I thought Ansah looked injured in the first game. He couldn't go in the second game. They were still able to generate pressure. What were the Lions able to do on the ground in the second half without Abdullah?
Yeah, that's true.
I thought they kept the defense honest, and to me it just kind of boils down to what's more important to this team, pass rush or running the ball. And to me it's easily pass rush, especially against a team like
that. I wouldn't disagree with that at all, but I just think that we've always thought ever since the beginning of the season that defensive line was the deepest position, and added, obviously, that is considering that Ansa's there. But I think without Ansah, you still have, what, 9 players along the defensive line, because now you have Brandon Copeland at linebacker. It comes down to linebacker depth.
Yeah. Which got a huge blow taken to it. Just like a blowtorch taken to it.
Yeah. The Lions linebackers, I think I saw one of the beat writers, I don't know which one, I don't want to attribute to the wrong one, their six top linebackers that they came into camp with, five of them are gone now with injury. John Bostic, Josh Bynes, those guys are on IR. Or Josh Bynes not even on the team anymore. You got Levy. We still don't know what's going on with him. I'm not ready to hit the panic button on Levy yet. He's only missed one game.
But yeah, we've got a lot of people who are like throwing in the towel on Levy's whole career, and I'm just like, holy
God. We got the beat writers asking if it's long term, if he will be out for the season too. I mean, that's not really helping out our.
Yeah.
No, it's not.
That certainly created a storm amongst fans who are like, what? This is a season ending injury? Well, where I think I'm kind of on the reporter side. I don't know who asked the question, but the only time that Jim Caldwell ever seems to talk about injuries is when there's a long-term injury. So I think the guy was just trying to kind of get that out of Caldwell. Like, just say, hey, is he going to be out for the year? Then maybe Caldwell slips and says, no, it's a short-term injury. That, and then that's a story to run with. But
yeah, I'm getting really tired of the sparring with Caldwell. Like these pressers are getting worse and worse. But I mean, I don't blame him for holding out information.
I don't blame either side, to be honest. Yeah. Like, Caldwell's fine to not say anything. He's well within his right. The Patriots don't do it. A bunch of teams don't do it. And I'm fine with the reporters pushing him every step of the way because that's their job. Like, I don't know. I don't get people who get mad over this sort of stuff. It's just press conferences.
Yeah. Granted, I would really like to know what's going on with Levy, though, because I think at this point, yeah, the linebacker depth incredibly hinges with him now.
Right.
Well, the thing that's most concerning to me is when at the beginning of the week when it was, okay, Levy missed a practice, Levy misses a second practice, but Terrell Austin says, well, we expect him to be there on Sunday. Did the coach? I mean, I feel like the coaching staff is to blame for the fact that when Armbrister had to come in a pinch, that man was lost on the field.
Absolutely,
like, did they just have too many eggs in the basket that thought, well, Levy's going to be healthy, he's going to be ready to go? Was that just coach speak? Did they believe that he was going to be ready? Because how does he play every snap? Doesn't look injured and then just misses a game.
Yeah, and you know what? When I saw him questionable on the Friday game status too, I thought, oh, okay, this is just the NFL readjusting from losing their probable status. And instead, no, he's completely out.
Right. Well, I mean, he was listed as doubtful,
was doubtful. You're right. You're absolutely right.
Yeah. I just don't know like what the Lions could have done. I'm not sure. Like, a lot of people are harping on that Terrell Austin quote, and it was just kind of like an off comment. I'm not sure he entirely meant what he said, to be honest.
Yeah, that sounds like coach speak to me, to be honest.
The issue to me is, I mean, the Lions don't even have a linebacker on their practice squad. It's not like they could have brought someone else up. They would have had to sign someone that week and start them, or, you know, have them there as backup. And the Lions just got caught in a mess, and it sucks for them. But you know, I don't know what else they could have done.
All right, let's.
Yeah, I think Armbrister looking lost is just a product of him not really knowing or being completely acclimated to the scheme yet. But I guarantee you that was just coach speak, and he told Armbrister to get ready at some point.
All right, let's move on. Before we go to the Packers, real quick note, the Lions have released Andrew Corliss. Quick thoughts there, like really quick thoughts. Anything like this feels like a waste, like of just everything, like wasted PR, wasted everything.
I'm just so glad that Lions have poured so many resources into this tight end position and they've done nothing at linebacker. Like, it infuriates me. I'm so upset about it. Like, we all saw it coming from a mile away, but we were so concerned, like, the Ebron injury, and it was just, like, Kerry Lee and Andrew Corliss and every other tight end we could pull off the market, and we're just tight end, tight end, tight end, and, like Jeremy said, we don't even have a linebacker on the practice squad.
I get that, but, like, this linebacker thing kind of came out of nowhere. I mean, maybe not with Josh Bynes and John Bostic, but
It looked thin, though, on the 53-man chart.
Without Bostic, it looked thin, and then all of a sudden Bynes getting cut before week one, that was kind of a shocker.
It was always a problem.
Yeah.
But with Corliss, just real quick on him, I'm not going to harp on the whole gun charge thing. I just find it interesting that the Lions clearly think that a roster spot is better spent on a guy like Kari Lee or Cole Wick.
We'll,
yeah, that was kind of the weird thing about the Corliss thing. Is like, if you were going to like reshuffle it with this, I would have rather taken Corliss over Colwick. But again, I'm not going to sit out here and die on the hill for a second or third string tight end when Ebron is out here. Let's talk about Green Bay. Do we have a prayer? Let me rephrase it to our favorite sports talkies. Is this a must win for the Detroit Lions?
No,
we're in week three. Stop it.
I throw that out and just about, do the Lions have a prayer? I think a lot of people are defeatist about this game, but I think if anyone was watching that Vikings-Packers game Sunday night, you should feel not great about the Lions' chances, but you should feel a little better about them, because the Packers have not been playing well.
Right. I have a hot take. Sorry. I have a quick hot take. I think the Lions could beat anybody in the NFL. I think they could beat the Broncos. I think they could beat the Packers. Anybody. But I also think they could lose to any team in the NFL. It's all about their inconsistency. I mean, which Lions are we going to see on Sunday? Hopefully the one that showed up for the first half of the Colts game, but we don't know.
Yeah, and to me, like, this is just one of those matchups that can go either way. To me, the Lions were almost more poorly matched up against the Titans, because it's those defensive teams. I kind of harp on this every week, but it's the good defensive teams that give the Lions struggles, because we know the Lions defense is probably going to struggle a little bit. If the offense can keep pace, though, they're going to be okay. And Green Bay's defense looked okay last night. But they, you know, they didn't have, Sam Shields, and they eventually got torched by Sam Bradford.
So yes, Sam Bradford and Stephon Diggs. Diggs was a big part of that.
The Packers made Sam Bradford look like a guy you should trade a first round pick for.
I hate you.
Which, yeah, never should have happened.
So let that set in. I mean, this is an okay matchup for the Lions. Obviously, you're worried about Aaron Rodgers torching the Lions secondary, and a lot is going to have to do with who the Lions have available. But I'm not counting out the Lions yet.
Speaking of Aaron Rodgers, and I know Ryan, you've been stewing over there for a little bit. I'll get to you in like real quick. But like Aaron Rodgers, like wasn't that like one of his worst games on Sunday night? Like statistically, from what I heard, granted, that's against like a Vikings defense we've been touting for a while, but he just didn't look good last night.
I mean, statistically, Aaron Rodgers hasn't been very good for the past like year and couple games. I mean, he hasn't looked like the Aaron Rodgers that we all are accustomed to seeing for quite some time. And I mean, chalk that up to whatever you want it to be, but I don't know if it's play calling. I don't know if it's play calling. I don't know if it's Mike McCarthy. I don't know, whatever they want to make of it. But
last year it was all about the wide receivers, how he has none apparently or something. So
then they had offensive line struggles. I mean, Josh Sitton leaves, and now you have new guys in the interior of the line, and everything's being reworked. And who knows? I mean, you want to talk about how the stupid cliche of anybody can win, that's why they play the game on Sundays. Look at what happened to the Seattle Seahawks on Sunday. They went into the Coliseum, a game where if I could have put my entire checking account on the Seahawks -6, I would have done it as many times as possible. And they they lost 9-3. Like, what the hell? I mean, the Lions are fine. They're going to go into Green Bay. I'm not concerned about the Packers offensively or defensively. I'm concerned about the Lions being healthy.
I think going to your point, too, like, look what happened between the Jaguars and the Packers, too. You know, the Jaguars played Green Bay close, and we're all like, okay, that's kind of interesting. And then what happened last Sunday? What happened to the Jaguars?
Shellacked by the Chargers.
No. The Cardinals.
The Cardinals?
Didn't they play the Cardinals? Did I get this completely wrong?
Wrong.
The Chargers.
Well, the Packers played the Jaguars. Jaguars played the Chargers on Sunday.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. I'm trying to remove it. I'm sorry. You're right. It was the Chargers. Who did Arizona beat down? They beat down someone mercilessly.
Tampa Bay.
That's who it was. Okay. Either way, I'm sorry about that. Continue on, Ryan. That's it.
Anything can happen. On
oh my
any
god!
Sunday.
I'm being NFL. So awful here. We were doing so well, and then finally, just rushing back in came my inability to run a podcast. Apparently, so, no. I don't know what to think of this game. I really don't. Someone was asking me, like, "Are you going to learn? Are we going to know who the Lions are on Sunday?" And I just thought, no. You're not going to learn about them until probably week 4 or 5. Like they're just,
I mean, you can't learn about anyone until you learn about their opponents too. Because who's Green Bay at this point? Are they a terrible team who's keeping close games with the Jaguars, who might also be terrible, but might also be good and just had a bad game? Or, you know, we just know so little about every team right now, and it's just cool it with every overreaction you have right now, and don't think the Lions are out of any game at this point, because they aren't.
Speaking of overreactions, can we read something from JS comments?
Yes.
I love JS comments.
I saw Alex was posting this in Slack, so I just wanted to
I really wanted us to bring this up.
Can you give a little background as to what JS comments is?
JS comments is, so that's the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, which is their big paper up there. We actually did a Pride of Detroit post way back about how who was it? One of their writers, one of your readers wrote into the editor, and they ran this piece. And I think Aaron Rodgers even responded to it, where the person who wrote in question said that the Packers running hard counts was ruining football. Like, these are some of like these are like Packers fans, Wisconsin fans, who are just the dumbest, like these are the bottom barrel of the Packers fan base.
If you think the Stafford haters are bad, just look at this Twitter account. These people, like, there's so many people that for some reason hate Aaron Rodgers, even though he's given them a championship. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, like, well, that's kind of the comment I want to read, but I also noted, like, I think last night, what was it, ESPN NFL Twitter account, they were like, here's the score at the half, and the Packers are down. Every comment is just like the Packer. It's just coming from Packers fan. This team is trash. Get rid of Aaron Rodgers. Get rid of McCarthy. It's like, holy crap. But the one I want to read, and then we've got to go on to our next segment. Rodgers is a one-time champ that wasn't consistent. He's basically Trent Dilfer. That's all I wanted to do.
Trent freaking Dilfer.
Oh, actually, no. I need to do this other one because this is my favorite thing. Because we always harp on quarterbacks forever saying I. Somehow, someone managed to get the hot take on the opposite side of this. We is Rodgers' favorite word. He never takes credit for anything bad. With that, welcome to Hate Week. You're playing the Packers on Sunday. Get ready. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to do Wally's World and our new segment, Rage Corner. Jeremy kind of willed this one into existence, so we're going to do it. Pride of Detroit podcast, inspired by Jeremy going off, and who else had the rant? Was it you, Ryan, who had the mini rant last time too?
Yeah, it was my final nail in the Jake Rudock coffin.
Oh yeah, that's right, I remember now. So we've just decided we're gonna carve out about I don't know, 5 minutes, 10 minutes for this thing. We're going to call it Rage Corner. If like two or three of us have rants to go on, we're just going to give space to these rants.
Can we have a theme song that isn't really a song? It's just the Rick and Morty thing.
That's what I'm putting in here. And some very and some very dramatic music. Yes.
I'm yelling at you.
Kangaroo Court.
This is Kangaroo Court.
If you don't know what we're talking about, Google, go on YouTube and look for Denver Allen.
Rick and Morty.
Rick and Morty. And it's the guys. If you don't know what Rick and Morty is, it's a fantastic cartoon. But there was this amazing trial in Georgia, because of course it was in Georgia. And just the transcript from that trial was just so funny. But all right, who wants to start on Rage Corner? I don't want to start right now because I'm not really lathered up right now. It's my big hot take, but
I can go. I think it's gonna transition well into yours if I know what you're gonna talk about.
Ryan, did you have one too, or is it just me and Jeremy today?
I could rage. I could rage.
All right. Well, let's try to keep it short. We're kind of on, you know, sure, borrowed time, but let's get going. Okay. Jeremy,
we all are.
Yeah. Jeremy, tee us up.
Okay. So last week I kind of went off on Caldwell and his game management. This week I'm actually going to give him some props, or at least point to people who are blaming him for something he shouldn't be blamed for. And that's the penalties. The penalties were the big story of the game. And everyone just kind of points to, 17 penalties. Caldwell doesn't have, he doesn't have a control of this team. He has an undisciplined team, undisciplined. So I don't understand where this word comes from and why it applies to just every penalty. Why anytime a player screws up, he's undisciplined. Like, the reason you have a holding penalty isn't because you don't know how to play the game. It's because you messed up, you got in a vulnerable position, and you tried to cheat your way and get away with it. That's what you're taught to do when you mess up, is to kind of cheat your way through it. That's not undisciplined. That's just poor play. So Lakin Tomlinson isn't undisciplined. He's just kind of crappy.
You know what the funny thing is? When I ran that Facebook Live, I asked, give me coaches who are, like, renowned for discipline. And I got two names right out of the bat. One is Bill Belichick, who gets to be amazing at everything, apparently.
Sure, of course.
And the other was Tom Coughlin, who people saying that Tom Coughlin had disciplined teams have not washed down of Giants football in their life.
Everyone is very myopic about this sort of thing, and big games with a lot of penalties happen.
Tom Coughlin's Giants teams are hilariously undisciplined by their definition of undisciplined. They get so many penalties.
And to me, penalties are extremely random. You don't typically see a team at the bottom of the penalty charts every year. And to Caldwell's credit, none of these penalties were like the personal. I mean, there was one Golden Tate block that was a personal foul. No other personal fouls in the game. We're talking about just errors in judgment. If you want to get on Caldwell for the offsides penalties, that's fine, but that's absolutely not what killed the Lions on Sunday at all, the three offside penalties. To me, this is just poor play leading to penalties. Pass interference, where your players are in the wrong position and they have to cheat to make their way up. Again, not undisciplined play, poor play. And if you want to bag on Caldwell for that, go ahead, but then every single thing that happens on the field then becomes Caldwell's fault. Every single thing. And if you're doing that, like, why are you even bothering analyzing individual players?
That leads pretty well into mine. And that's about the people bagging on Caldwell. The Rage Corner, I feel, is like us going to turn into our frustration about bad narratives floating around the fan base. And just us kind of, like, finally lashing back. I've got a problem with people talking about Caldwell and his emotion, or lack thereof. And I find that in general, like, people in general, I feel, don't actually care about coaching. They care about the theater of coaching. A coach yelling at a player on a sideline or yelling at fired up is not a sign of good or poor coaching. If anything, it's a sign of bad coaching, because you're losing your temper like that, and we can play all the audio we want about that guy from Last Chance U swearing up a storm. You know exactly what I'm talking about, Jeremy. He's swearing and cursing up a storm. That is not a man who is in control of his emotions at that point.
If you watch that series, it's like he almost loses the entire locker room at one point. I don't want to spoil anything because it's an amazing show with a crazy
show.
Ending.
It's a great show.
But you don't want to coach like him. He's dog shit.
But like, yeah, like this is where we get into, because a lot of people are today. It's like, I don't like how Caldwell is standing on the sidelines and not showing any emotion and like not really firing the guys up. And I'm sorry, like, These guys in the NFL, they're grown-ups. They're not playing in high school. They're not playing in college. They don't need a coach to fire them up. If they're not fired up to play on Sunday, that's a problem of the player and not the coach. But because our sports imagination prizes guys who, like, in our imaginations, are guys like Vince Lombardi, who, like, you know, Vince Lombardi's been mythologized as the man who makes boys into men. And that's horseshit. That's all horseshit. Like, these guys are professionals out there. They don't need someone to yell at them. If you yell at these guys, like, everyone loves the idea of the yelling coach, but that coach doesn't work in the NFL. Because you want to know who was the yelling coach in the NFL? It was Nick Saban. Nick Saban trying to yell at someone to tie their shoes during training. And Nick Saban lost the locker room in Miami immediately after that and had to run back to Alabama with his tails between his legs. Like, you can't be the yelly coach on the sidelines. But more to the point, it's not even about yelly or being calm. And, you know, we oscillate between the two. When it was Jim Schwartz, they wanted the calm coach. They wanted the guy to impose discipline, because Schwartz became the avatar of what you were talking about there, Jeremy, undiscipline. But as soon as you get the Caldwell, you want to oscillate the other way. But either way, these are completely secondary and completely meaningless judgments about someone's coaching ability. And it just leads me to the conclusion that these people who care about this stuff they don't actually care about coaching ability. They care about the theater of coaching. They care about, because, I mean, in a large part, sports are theater. Sports are drama. Sports are the soap opera for men. And all they care about is just making sure that the coach plays the part in their mind they want it to play. It doesn't actually matter if Caldwell's schemes or his in-game decision-making ability on fourth down or clock management matter, until, of course, they suck. But they care more about the emotion, the character that Caldwell is playing. And that's annoying to me, because it's not you don't actually care about the coaching. You just care about your useless theater. Ryan, take it away. Did you have one, or are you good?
Oh, absolutely. I've been kind of stewing over here, ready to get to my point. So the big beef that I have this week is with the Detroit sports radio personalities, specifically Mr. Jeff Rieger. I don't even care.
We're finally starting our first beef, our first real beef on this podcast. I love it.
I'm not going to subtweet. I'm not going to do anything of that nature. I'm going to straight out call him the lazy, most simple-minded person that has ever been given the ability to get on a microphone on the radio and voice his opinion.
You've got to start with when he filled in for Mike Valenti a couple weeks ago. Is that where you're going to start?
Well, I hope going to start. So Jeff Rieger fills in for actually Terry Foster.
Terry Foster,
who suffered a mild stroke. Now Jeff Rieger is a part of the drive time, the most important critical part of a radio time slot. Yes, Chris Lemieux?
They're actually like what? I thought they were late morning.
They're from 2 to 6.
Yeah, I mean, but more importantly, like Foster and Valenti is like, that's picked up nationally. Like, that is like the biggest local sports radio show in the nation, because a lot of people listen to it streaming than like any other local show. And like, yeah, drive time, that's a big slot. Yeah.
Yes, huge slot. So Jeff Rieger gets put in this position because, why? I don't know. He's not good at his fucking job. This is the problem with Jeff Rieger, is that last night he tweets, breaking, have it from a great source. SOL is alive and well. He wanted to send a strong message today, and I think he succeeded.
Wait, is he saying God wants the Lions to fail?
He said he. and he used it twice, and he didn't capitalize he the second time, so I'm not sure if he's talking about a higher being. But fuck you, Jeff Rieger. I'm sick of you. I'm sick of you tainting everybody's minds because you're simple, you're lazy, and you're bad at your job, okay?
I was
hoping the problem is that he fosters this mentality. The people who listen, it's an easy excuse to call any Lions flub, any kind of failure, to call it SOL. It doesn't matter if the Lions play a perfect game. The Lions played basically a perfect game on offense for the entire game against the Colts. If that field goal doesn't go in at the end of the game, Jeff Rieger can sit behind his SOL and he can thump his chest, and I can call him lazy and I can call him bad at his job, because if he wants to use that as an excuse for any of the Lions' failures, then he's bad at his job because he's not giving anything credible. And if he wants to say, because people will fire back on Twitter and call him lazy, and he'll say, I'm not lazy. I'm just saying what it is. That's what it is. You guys watch this. This is your product.
You first brought up Rieger to me because you were listening to him. I think this was before the season started, where he was basically saying, like, SOL before the season started. Like, the Lions are doomed because SOL. And that's just horribly fucking circular logic.
Yeah, you're not going to advance at any point. Why play the football games? Why watch? And he'll sit there and he'll say, well, I don't watch. This isn't my team. And he'll try to take this hands-off approach where, well, I just do it for my job. Well, if you just do it for your job, then you need to do your job better, okay? So, Jeff Rieger, I'm sick of your shit. I hope Terry Foster gets well soon, because you're awful at your job. The Tiger season's almost over. You'll have no reason to be on the radio. You'll be stuck doing 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock time slots where nobody's going to be listening to your dumbass. So I'm done with Jeff Rieger.
Fuck to Jeff Rieger. Fuck to Jeff Rieger.
Boycott 97.1, because Jeremy is trying to make me a better man, because I listen to this shit just to hear the people that go on there and combat him. And you know what? Valeni has turned a corner, because he'll at least, like, tell it like how it is, okay?
But someone even said he was blaming the refs today. I didn't hear myself.
And Valenti was, like, going after Rieger for saying his SOL thing. Valenti was saying that Rieger was being lazy. If Valenti's saying that about you, holy shit.
And that's, say what you want about Valeni, he's at least good at his job. I mean,
yes,
he's entertaining, and he will bring you sufficient points, and he will actually back things up with more than just, well, they've been bad and they're always going to be bad.
Moral of the story is, don't listen to sports talk radio. You have a podcast that you're listening to right now.
We're better. Fuck to Jeff Rieger.
And Jeff Rieger curses way too much, so I can't even listen to him when kids are in the car. So
wait, hold up. He curses on, like, air, over the air.
He says bitches.
That's not like FCC. Like, that's not banned by the FCC. But yeah, that's bad.
Honestly, I hate that word more than any other swear word, because it's gross. Mm-hmm. It's gross.
We're getting in some.
It's gross because Jeremy's dog watching.
Yes, that's why
it offends dogs on a level.
Yeah, I think we said it once, and, like, one of his dogs popped its ear up and was just, like, looking at me wanting to fight. All right, real quick, let's do Wally's World.
Where's Wally? Where's Wally? Did you say him? Where's Wally?
Where's Wally? Where?
You want me to get into it right now?
Yeah. That was the imaging that was just played. So quick, do we have a Wally thing?
We do real quick. I'll keep it to like 45 seconds. Okay, so I've spoken to the fact that my dad, the biggest mistake I've made in my young life is I've introduced him to fantasy football. And all day yesterday, while he is winning his matchup by 30 points, he has to remind me of all the good decisions he made with his lineup.
Oh, no.
And when Danny Woodhead goes down on my team and tears his ACL, and I say, God damn it, like, that's just my luck today. The Lions lose. Danny Woodhead goes out with an injury. Like, this is just a shitty day when it comes to football. My dad goes, well, there's always next week. I don't want to hear there's always next week right after my player tears his ACL and your team is ahead by 30. And then in the Sunday night game, I'm hearing from the living room talking about how Jordy Nelson needs to get the ball thrown more to him when the guy he's playing has no more players playing and he's winning by 30 points.
I thought you were going to do the Tigers one, but this is just as good.
This is the moral of the story. Don't ever introduce old people to new ways how to watch football, because they're probably going to be bad ways how to watch football.
We didn't even get into talking about you and fighting in hockey. Maybe we'll do that in the mailbag. Stick around. We're going to be taking your questions next. Mailbag time. It's our favorite time of the year. You can always send us a question to us when we decide to put it up on Pride of Detroit. I think we're recording these like Monday night now, so every Ask POD is probably going to be Monday during the day. Unless, of course, the Lions play on like Monday Night Football, which they won't do until the Cowboys. We also got some questions in from Jeremy's personal Twitter account, so we have diversified, and I'm looking, and holy crap, Jeremy, you got a ton now, so I'm not quite sure where to start here, to be honest. Let's see, let's start here. Let's start. And by the way, you can send us these questions about anything, not just the Lions. We get a lot of Lions questions, but we also get a lot of other questions too. Let's start with one of our regulars, Joseph R. Sweeney 5. No one seems to care that the running game has finally starting to click. Is this a mirage? Is the running game a mirage? Is this running game for real, guys?
I don't know. It's certainly not 6.0 yards per carry real. That's insane. I think that's what they ran for last week, and they're averaging, what, 5.5 right now or something like that?
Yeah, it's close to 5.5. I think it's 5.3, but that's not sustainable.
That's not going to happen, and with Abdullah, it's looking like he's probably going to be out at least a week or so. I was kind of with Reno what he said earlier in the podcast when he said the way that Theo Riddick is running right now is not sustainable. It's interesting. It's great. But he's going to get himself into trouble a lot. But that being said, I think this is probably an average running game, which is a huge step up from last year.
All right. We got a lot of questions here about Caldwell. I think we answered all of them in Rage Corner. So please direct your attention there and have fun. Next question from Critical Perspective. Mid-game substitution question. What position do you think Rory the Lion is best suited for?
Crickets. I don't know.
Sure, I'm pretty sure the Detroit Lions did a video of this like around draft time. What were you saying, Ryan?
He ran the combine or some stupid shit.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
That.
He ran the combine or he some did. Stupid shit like that. Rory is probably best served as somebody to conduct concussion protocol on the sidelines.
Oh, no. Why'd you do that, man? Why'd you do that? That's
big eyes. You know what they say about big eyes? Big pause.
Big pause. Pause. Yeah.
Oh, let's hope he can play linebacker. That's all I have to say.
Yeah, exactly. Big Blue Silver, this isn't a question. I just wanted to point out that all those drops broke Stafford's streak of 17 games with a completion percentage above 60%. Cool.
Okay.
All right, next question. Oh no, here we go. From Smurf 0404, is Levy done?
No, stop it. Stop it. Don't hey. Make me go into another rage corner.
Hold on. Levy is done. Sitting. Because he's gonna play this week. Hey.
Oh, you're putting yourself on the line. I like it. Ayo. Alright. Adam Sanders, .6661 has a few questions for us. I like this one a little better. Will Terrell Austin be the defensive coordinator next season? Should he be? I've got to say, like, coming down, Terrell Austin's, like, defense has been kind of, like, as we shed personnel, I've been less and less, like, enthused about Terrell Austin. What do you guys think?
I want to hear Alex Reno's take.
Hey, guess what? I tried to tell y'all. That's all I got to say.
No. You need to say more because everybody in here is not in the Slack room.
I mean, what's more to say? I thought he was overrated as a defensive coordinator last year. I thought his personnel changes were completely mind-boggling. I don't know what the hell he's doing out there sometimes.
I just think that he's like, yeah, I thought he got his reputation because he had all that personnel in 2014. And after you lost Sue and Fairley, it's kind of like you look at what he's done with the defense since. And it's kind of like, yeah, I'm not really that impressed.
That's true, I feel like he deserves some credit for turning around the defense last year. Granted, it started out the worst defense in the league, but he did turn things around. And there, you do have a point there that his personnel decisions are questionable a lot. Like, it takes him a long time to kind of get the right guys out there. But last year, he kind of had to deal with Levy suddenly getting injured. This year, same sort of thing. Like, no linebackers now. He's probably going to have to deal with Ziggy out for a little bit. Like, it's going to take a while for this defense to adjust. I think he's going to get it back on track at least a little bit. It'll still be a below-average defense probably for most of the year. But he's had some hardships thrown his way, and I think that needs to be considered a little bit too.
Yeah, well, I think the biggest thing, too, is his ability or inability to not be able to make adjustments. I mean, like, this defense so far this year has seemed to look pretty good in the first half, and then we get to the second half, and I don't really see any pass rushing getting to the quarterback in the second half. I mean, it just seems like he's completely ill-prepared after what he sees in the first half or something.
So is Terrell Austin the defensive coordinator next year?
I think that's going to really depend on whether Jim Caldwell's the coach next year.
Sure.
And if that happens, I sure as heck hope that Terrell Austin isn't going to be the replacement head coach like everybody wanted last year.
Yeah, that's...
I think that ship has sailed.
Yeah. I don't think Caldwell gets fired before the end of the year. Like, people are already calling for his firing, like... Like, I don't see any situation where firing a coach in the middle of the season ever fixes anything.
It won't happen.
It's to make people feel better. It's literally a sacrificial lamb.
I don't want to predict coaches' jobs right now because we have no idea what the team's going to do.
Yeah, we're not even to week three.
If we're 2-13, sure, maybe the Lions fire Caldwell a week early to get a jump on the head coaching start, but...
We might be 2-1 next week, and we just won't be talking about this.
Yeah, maybe.
Right.
All right, next question, another one from Adam Sanders. Is a s'more a sandwich?
Yes.
Shut up.
I think it is.
Yep.
If it's
y'all got to welcome sandwiches.
Hold up.
There's a lot.
Ryan, not a visual medium. He is holding his head.
I don't think that you consider you can't consider a s'more a sandwich.
Well, I think it boils down to, do you consider the graham crackers to be the bread in this scenario? Because if you're using that as the definition for the bread, then it has to be a sandwich because you have two pieces of what would normally be of a grain serving as a bread. And you've got the filling between.
Stop. This is the worst question we've ever received from.
No. Because the fillings inside are sugar. They're marshmallow and they're chocolate.
So is
peanut butter and jelly.
Yes.
It has traditional bread.
Let the mic drop there.
Let me drop my fucking mic. Let me drop my mic. Crackers are not bread.
That wasn't your argument, and I don't think bread is even necessary in the equation. I consider a lettuce wrap a sandwich.
Well, is a hot dog a sandwich?
Oh my god, you consider a lettuce
what
wrap
is this
a sandwich?
Wait, hold on, wait.
No, it's a wrap.
Wraps are sandwiches too.
No, they're not. No, they're fuck not.
Well, it depends. So not our fucking lettuce.
Our burrito sandwiches?
Yes.
Eat my ass. Get out of here.
Sandwiches. You got to welcome all these foods as sandwiches because what's. I don't.
Our hot dog sandwiches?
Yes.
Shut up.
I just want to hear Alex say shut up.
Fuck my dick.
All right. All right. Here we go. Next question. JJ. This one is certainly to cool the crowd down. JJ2672. Very dry chicken wings with a good sauce of your choosing or fish tacos.
I don't like the idea of dry wings.
Yeah, I don't know why he put that qualifier in there because
yeah,
I think he's trying to dumb down wings. Chris, I think so. Fish tacos will at least be able to get in the conversation.
Dry wings with the sauce of your choosing. Can I just like lather those wings up with the sauce?
I guess.
Then I would choose the wings.
Oh god, that's such a mozzarella sticks lover answer.
You're the fucking team wings guy.
I feel like our anger from the Lions game is boiling over into topics. Like we're trying to act calm about the Lions, but now it's all boiling over.
Who takes
anything to say about the Lions? But I'm letting it all out.
I like fish tacos. That's all I'll say. I like fish tacos.
Do you like fish sticks?
No. I know what you were going on there with the Kanye thing, the South Park Kanye thing, but at the same time, like I lived for too long on like freezer fried fish. So yeah, I'm done with all that. All right. Not fully football yet, but John Whitaker wants to know thoughts on the cheerleaders.
Did anyone notice
the cheerleaders were there?
I did. I didn't care.
I think the Free Press had a quote that said the fan experience was positive, and they even had a quote that said the vivacity of the experience.
Yeah, I'm sure the fan experience is really good there with some 350-pound guy just beating his putt off in public.
God, smooth on.
But let's be real, though. The Lions are 0-1 at home ever since they got cheerleaders.
That's true.
Cheerleader curse.
It's real.
They won't win football for 100 years.
They're distracted by the booty.
You know who else is distracted by the booty?
Who's that?
The Buccaneers. Yeah. Get it? Get it? Because they're pirates?
Stupid idiot.
I wish that would have been the John Cena hook, so I didn't have to hear that.
I was unsure of what you were going for there, Ryan.
Dad joke.
All right. Blueberry Jim wants to ask, is it egregious to say it's on Cooter and Stafford to make this a season?
It's never Cooter's fault.
That's not what he's asking. Is it on them to win games? And yeah, the answer is absolutely yes. This defense isn't going to win a lot of games. They've only forced, one turnover so far? An amazing. I wish that Glover Quinn interception meant something because that was an amazing pick.
Yeah.
Is a sack considered a turnover?
A sack?
A sack. A safety.
What? I was going to ask this too. I would consider it because you get the ball back and you get points. Why not?
It's technically not. That's a good question. It's technically not statistically considered a turnover.
Whatever. Okay, Stickler.
It is in my heart.
All right, next question from Kurt. If we can't beat the Titans at home, who the hell can we beat? This team doesn't have any real hope, right? You know what? If you want to give up hope right now, buddy, go right ahead.
Are you Jeff Rieger?
No, his name's Kurt. Mr. Easy Street.
Have you seen Kurt and Jeff Rieger in the same room at the same time?
I have not.
Mm. Easy Street.
Easy, Gazorp Azort Field.
Steve wants to ask, who should the Lions take with the number one pick? Really?
They're trading up to the number one pick?
DeShone Kizer?
That makes me happy.
Wait, do you think anybody's going to swap the 32nd pick for the first pick?
I don't think that's ever happened.
Be interesting.
Be very interesting. You know who I think they should take with the first pick? John Cena!
The Buccaneers.
Son of a bitch.